Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Oh, Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Final day of March. As time marches on, Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, longest month ever. Am I right, Bick? Bick, are you there today, sir?
Yeah, I am here. I saw a funny tweet yesterday just talking about like how long this month has been. But also remember, like, this all started midway through the month. Think how long April is going to be.
Oh, yeah. It's a very good point. And someone pointed that out to me the other day, and Jamie and I actually talked about on the show today that we last week, so we do our, you know, brought to you by Neutral Vodka Soda, six-pack for the weekend. We give you six games generally to watch, the six best games, and obviously during this hiatus we've been doing other things, but we went with six games from the NHL season that are worth tuning into again now that League Pass is unlocked and you can access any game anytime you want. And one of the games was Mika Zibanejad's five-goal game against the Washington Capitals. It was a 6-5 overtime win. He scored five of the six goals for the Rangers, which feels like forever ago. That was this month still. That was March 5th.
Man. Yeah, that feels like, yeah, a whole season ago. We were just kind of doing the exercise yesterday of, you know, because we rebroadcasted the 7-5 Chicago-Vancouver game last night, and it was like, I don't even feel like I remember that game. And then you start kind of going through the schedule, it's like, yeah, okay, this game happened and this game happened, but it all feels so foreign right now.
Yeah, it certainly does. In some ways, having done the show every single day, and we're coming up with different content, and you and I are having hockey discussions, even though there's no hockey going on, in some ways I say, wow, it's already been 3 weeks without hockey, and here we are. And then there's other ways where I say, dude, the end of the season was supposed to come up this Saturday. That is crazy to me.
Would the Canucks have been in a playoff spot, Scott?
We'll never know. And
there would have been two games left. And think how chaotic it would have been if there were games right now. They'd be preparing for a game in Arizona right now, coming off of Dallas. And you know, Arizona, Vegas, all those teams fighting for a playoff spot. We're feeling some chaos now in a circumstance we hadn't ever seen. That circumstance would have been something Canucks fans hadn't felt in some time.
No question about it. Those big games that we all look forward to. You know, I was kicking one around today. We broke down the first meeting, at least the second game, I suppose. Second meeting ever between Ovechkin and Crosby. One of the great rivalries in sport to me in the 21st century that we're living in right now, because they've been in the same division and because they've played so many times and because they've had multiple playoff series and they've each won at least one championship. And you realize how long ago that was, but you also realize what we've been treated to with those two particular athletes. And we started formulating lists. McDavid is at the top of the charts right now as far as individual talent. Who, for you, Bick, do you see as the most likely rival for McDavid? Now, maybe he never gets one. Some of the greats across sports, they never get that one standalone rival. But is there a player in the NHL that you look at right now, whether it's Pettersson, whether it's MacKinnon, Austin Matthews, who is the most likely to be the rival moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's Nathan MacKinnon because the ages kind of match up too. And he's got that dynamic skating ability, so stylistically they look very similar as well. I think the one everyone wants it to be is Elias Pettersson, and that could certainly be a conversation maybe 2 years down the road, but it's going to take some time for them to, you know, both kind of reach their powers, the height of their powers, and also for the teams to be trending in the same direction. The key element here is you need playoff series, right? You absolutely need playoff series. It's set up easier for Vancouver and Edmonton to play regularly than it is Colorado and Edmonton.
I agree with that. However, Mario and Wayne had that personal rivalry, and they were in different conferences. They were never meeting up in the playoffs, so that one still worked. But we're talking about two of the greats all time, and I suppose you have to be to that transcendent level if you're going to have something like that, and you don't have those playoff matchups.
Yeah, it'd be great to have a Gretzky-Lemieux scenario here. I don't know if that is presenting itself in today's NHL.
Scott Rentoul, Bick Nizar, we'd like to see the Canucks present themselves in the playoffs. And there's Elliot Friedman, man, he had some comments today. Did you hear him say that he estimates, or he's heard through sources, that if the NHL does not resume play again this year, that's going to cost the league approximately $1 billion that some people are kicking around?
Yeah, I saw that.
That's a big number.
And we're going to have him on later today, obviously, and certainly that's a question we'll pitch to him. The number, I guess, when you consider advertising and all of that, maybe the number's a lot higher just from hosting playoff games. Like, I would expect the number to be around 300 million, close around there. So, you know, over the course of 2 months, how much can you make off of your TV deal and your sponsorships and everything thereafter? That feels like a really, really big number. And if you want to talk about why there's urgency to get anything done, we'll just look at what the league is missing out on.
And what they might miss out on if there are no playoffs whatsoever, as you just allude to. And Friedman in that same clip said that, again, this was just ballpark figure right now, but if the league was able to conduct some sort of playoff scenario and get the eyeballs on it that it wants, that perhaps it would only lose 20% of that. That's $800 million. And so if you want to say, well, why is the league not calling it off? Why aren't they just focusing on next season? $800 million. That's probably why the league is saying, you know, if there's a way for us to play in the summer, I think we're going to do that.
Yeah, and think of all the issues it saves. And I know we were having a conversation yesterday of, okay, why would, if you had a regular season, if you finished the regular season, right, are some players really going to want to come back to play 10 games knowing that their season's already over? Well, here's the thing. It's not about the 10 games. It's about the business on a whole. From a player's point of view, if you can save yourself from having to pay 35% escrow, and playing 10 extra games helps that, and people, you know, come to the rink, and you kind of go about as business as normal, and you can try to recoup as much money as possible, well, there's your incentive for the players. I know it sucks that you have to come back and get in shape for those 10 games, and you're technically not playing for anything in the standings, but you're playing for the overall business. That impacts your earnings moving forward for not even just you, for the rest of the, you know, take care of the future generations in the NHL.
You mentioned the word business. Just before we get to the Canucks and the thought of them getting into the playoffs and who might benefit most or who could lose most based on the type of year each individual had, you mentioned business. I saw yesterday Calgary and Edmonton, both the Oilers and Flames, they're having to lay off a bunch of people, three digits in each case, and they're saying, look, these are just temporary layoffs. They're going to start mid-April. They're for 60 days, and the intimation was, we hope that we're going to be able to hire these people back. But this is a move we're going to have to take mid-April. And not surprisingly, you see online, there's a lot of people that start cracking back on those organizations. I always find it interesting because that is the natural tendency. And I'm like anybody else. You see people who really depend on it day in, day out, event in, event out, to make rent, Bick, to make their groceries and make their food bill work. And obviously, you feel badly for those people. And we view the organizations as these massive rich entities that just could be doling out money, no problem. And the reason I found it interesting is because every time there is some sort of dispute between the players and the owners, that's the only time that the majority of fans do not take up for the labor, which is the players. They view the players as the holdup. They view the players as greedy. And yet in every other case involving an organization, they will point the finger at the organization. It's kind of a strange dynamic.
Yeah, one that I've never really understood. It happens in every sport. It's because people want their product, right? And when it gets viewed as, hey, these guys are holding out and withholding the product that I want from me, well, then they're the ones to blame. But you got to remember, man, like these negotiations are two-way streets. And a lot of it's stunning how much ire doesn't get directed towards ownership at times. And it's kind of, it's because they're behind closed doors. They're not present. And it's like when you go to the airport and your flight gets canceled and you're mad at the teller at the desk. It's like, well, they don't own the airline. They're not responsible for it. They're just presenting the news to you, and you want to, you know, show your emotions, but you can only do it to one person because players are so prevalent in our society. You can see them on social media. That's the whole reason we watch these games. You associate the game through their eyes, and it gets attacked towards them more often than, you know, who's the key decision makers as far as how leagues run. And as far as, you know, employees now being reduced, it's tough. And look, I'm not here to bang on anyone for how they run their business, because these are unprecedented times. But yeah, you'd hope that they take care of employees. Like I saw overseas, like Barcelona, the players all cut their wages by 70%. Like that makes a huge dent into how you can recoup the rest of a business and its employees by these multimillionaire athletes, you know, taking a cut in the short term to help the overall state of the franchise, the organization, because you keep preaching, oh, it's all about everyone here together to help get these wins. It's nice when that gesture is extended, but it should come from even above that to help save these jobs.
Well, and it should be pointed out a couple of things here. One, that in both the Flames and Oilers organizations, to be fair, those who are remaining on some type of salary, they are all taking wage reductions, and that goes as high up as it can within those organizations. So anywhere from 10 to 25% depending on which position and which organization we are talking about. The other thing that does need to be pointed out, there have been countless, to me at this point, stories across the National Hockey League of players saying, yeah, I'll donate some money. I'll help out the employees that are losing their gigs right now. We can afford to give some up. So there are plenty of people who are doing the right thing. The other thing, the other point I'll make, and you said, hey, it's viewed through the eyes of the players because they're more tangible examples of what you can reach out and touch than the owners are. I think the other thing too, Bick, I think part of it's projection. I think a lot of fans that follow a sport, played that sport growing up, wish they could be in the skates or the shoes of the people they view on every Saturday night or Sunday afternoon, and they say, well, man, I would play for way less than that. You guys should just suck it up. Man, you're making millions of dollars. You're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'd kill for that opportunity. What are you arguing about? As opposed to going, yeah, but the guy who's paying has billions of dollars.
Yeah, nobody dreams about owning the... We all dream about hoisting the Stanley Cup and playing in the games. Nobody really dreams about, you know, being the one that signs the checks. As much as it's great to have the money, it's the emotion is associated to playing the game more than it is to owning the team.
I always just find it a weird dynamic. Just had to get that in. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, this is Canucks Central. As I teed up a couple of minutes ago, everybody in this market was hopeful the Canucks were going to get in, because now all of a sudden you get to see the Canucks would have had to have played to a certain level down the stretch, which means certain players would have had to be prominent, and we would have had some evidence, Bick, here, collected the playoffs, as to what a guy looks like at the most meaningful time of the year for hockey fans. It's a very generic question, but who stands out on the Canucks roster as being in a position to benefit most from getting into the postseason this year?
I kind of feel like Jacob Markstrom could have benefited the most.
Really?
And it's not, yeah, because it's a financial component to it, right? Because if they succeeded in the playoffs, right, his money would have went up. I've said this before. Like, he had a baseline of how much he was going to make. But the unfortunate part of all this is if they had a run, so, like, say they won two rounds, like, his contract skyrockets. Like, then we're talking about 7+, and those teams that would be on the fringe of maybe do we jump into the Markstrom sweepstakes, suddenly it's he's the guy going into a free agency that becomes really attractive. Holtby's going to be in that conversation too if he played well with Washington, but I kind of feel like there was untapped potential to how much Jacob Markstrom could have made if there were playoffs.
That's an interesting one. I see Markstrom's value having been just kind of forced into this one spot, but yeah, he could have had an increase if he gets on a bit of a run. I see the guy as a different Jake. I see the guy as Jake Virtanen, because I think for most of these players, you have to be in a position of contract, something that can affect your contract in some manner or the perceived value of you going forward. Vertanen's a restricted free agent, and that's always been the question about him. Well, he's got the tools for the playoffs. If he engages himself at that time of the year, what's that worth? And look, I don't know. You can be on either side of this Jake Vertanen conversation where you think that some people in the market overrate him or that he's constantly underrated. Whichever side of that camp you are on, Jake Vertanen was going to be in this interesting discussion that we assigned to certain players who achieve a certain level during the regular season, but if they can take it somewhere else in the playoffs when the game changes, then their value can go up exponentially.
Yeah, and look, you're on the right track as far as it has to be contractually related to some degree. So the three guys I kind of earmarked were Jake Vertanen, as you mentioned, Markstrom, as I mentioned, and I think the third guy would be Zach MacEwen for the same reason we talked about yesterday, right? If you can provide something and a spark or, you know, just have a footprint on a series or a playoff run in general, like that gets remembered. And Zach MacEwen's coming to his restricted free agent status as well. And not that you expect a big bonus or a big spike in pay, but the, you know, like there's a difference between going into arbitration and, you know, getting a 2-3 year contract or something like that. And if he kind of had an imprint on a series and showed that, hey, I can consistently be this type of player when you need me to be in the playoffs, that truculent, rugged type of player, which he already kind of is, maybe there's a belief of, hey, not that he's a core player, but one of the guys that you want in your bottom six for some time. Just, you know, same with Tyler Motte. He's not a core player, but we did the over-under of guys you want back. Like, to me, Tyler Mott's a fixture on a bottom six, well, really a fourth line role for the next couple of years here, for sure. It's if he brings that consistent effort, then it's hard to kind of see someone taking his spot in the line to do that. Zach MacEwen had that ability if there were a playoff run here or playoff games to kind of cement a future full-time spot in the lineup.
Well, and in some of these cases, Markstrom, I think, is outside of this discussion. But in some of these cases, if you have something to gain, then you probably have something to lose as well. And I think Vertanen fits into that category. If he didn't perform particularly well in the playoffs, that would have been a bit of a knock on him. And, well, what do the 18 or 20 or 22 goals, whatever he gets in the regular season, what do those really mean if he's not going to be the guy that you think he could be in the playoffs? I think Markstrom, that the floor was already set. Like, there was no way he was going to drop beyond a certain point because of the regular season and a half that he's had. Where does Tyler Toffoli fit into that conversation? I think he's more in line with Markstrom as well, that there's a base value that he's always going to get on the open market. But if he had gone into the playoffs and he'd torn it up, now all of a sudden, come free agency, that jumps.
Yeah. Well, the other part of this conversation is, are we always relating it back to how it benefits the Canucks as well, right? Obviously, if you have success in the playoffs, that's a benefit to the Canucks. But like the three guys we mentioned, like you and I both picture Jacob Markstrom here long-term. Mm-hmm. Jake Vertanen, Zach MacEwen, they're not going anywhere. But Tyler Toffoli, like that's still unwritten and it's still so up in the air of how that could transpire if he had success in the playoffs or not. Like it feels like it's, I don't know, 70-30, he walks, 60-40, somewhere in that range that he's played. He'll play for another team next season. And if he had a good playoffs, well, that increases his value to other teams, right? And I think you're right. He's created a baseline for himself on the open market. But I think there'll always be interest in him. Whereas with Jacob Markstrom now, like I still feel like he's – some teams might nibble, but no one's going to go jump in with 2 feet right now. And ultimately, it feels like he's always going to return here. Tyler Toffoli's unscripted where he could go next year.
Yeah, it's interesting you pointed out because if you look at it through the how does it benefit the Canucks lens, let's say a guy like Chris Tanev, for example, who I think the organization would want to keep around at a certain price point and for a very short term, but that may not happen and Tanev may look to cash in a little bit and the Canucks might not be willing to go there financially. Let's say a guy like Tanev has a tough playoff or the Canucks don't have a very good playoff. Does that depress his value to any point where the Canucks are all of a sudden more easily able to keep a guy like Chris Tanev?
The whole thing is it's a contractual thing, right? Is there a dollar figure you're comfortable giving to Chris Tanev, right? Because it feels like he's going to get a raise or at least similar contract. I'm not even sure if you can give him the same contract to come back. So unless
yeah,
it's
I'm not sure you
a
can
significant
either.
Discount. So yeah, so I'm just curious, like if we're talking about the inverse of this conversation of guys who had the most to lose, like he's in that conversation.
I think that's fair. Is Troy Stetcher in that same conversation?
Well, my pick for the most to lose actually had two guys, and they're the same type of player. Like it's Brandon Sutter and Jay Beagle, right? To me, they get lauded as like, okay, the veteran guys that when the going gets tough, we're finally going to have these guys ready. And if they struggle in the playoffs, well, those two guys are going to get a lot of eyeballs looked at them. Then we see the dollar figures and then we see how old they are. Moving forward, it feels like one of them doesn't come back. And, you know, they're kind of competing against each other if there were playoffs.
It's a good point. And I think more through the Canucks lens than their personal lenses. Look, their contracts are what they are. They're going to get paid what they're going to get paid. But
we often talk about, right?
Well, we often talk about portability. And if those two guys struggle in the playoffs, they become less portable. If they thrive in the playoffs, all of a sudden a team out there that doesn't have a great playoff run, that looks like it needs a veteran piece to help get some of its youngsters over the hump or just needs to add to what didn't get done the year before, all of a sudden they say, you know what, for 1 year on a Brandon Sutter, okay, I might be able to jump in on that. Or $3 million, I think, despite what's going to happen next year with the salary cap, that's not going to look too bad in a couple of years. Maybe I can get in on a Jay Beagle, for instance. So for those two guys, less contractual, more about portability.
For sure. Just curious, what's your case? I hate saying the word against, but against Troy Stetcher. He may not maximize his contract?
Yes, that would be the only thing. With a guy who's arbitration right eligible, what would it mean to him if he didn't have a great playoff? If he went to arbitration?
I still kind of feel like, right-handed D functional NHLers will still find ways to get paid in the NHL, right? Whether it's here in Vancouver or somewhere else, I feel like there would still be a baseline of interest in Troy Stetcher.
Here's one that isn't going to affect him contractually in the next couple of years. He's signed for those next two seasons. But I did wonder about Brock Besser. What do you think he had to lose if he had a tough playoff?
I don't know if there would be an immediate loss. But it would be the kindling to a future conversation of the type of player Brock Besser is, right? Like immediately we would all understand, okay, this is your first foray to playoffs. If you struggled, people could understand that. But if this happened a year later too, then people would say, well, is he really the type of player you can win with? Is he too much of that perimeter sniper type player, and those conversations would turn from whispers. Sorry, those whispers would turn into conversations.
I agree with that. And again, it becomes the word we always use in this industry over the last few years, that it becomes part of the narrative. And one of the narratives with Brock Besser right now is, well, could he stay healthy? Well, so far that hasn't proven to been the case, you know, and some of that is just bad luck. Sammy Salo got labeled with that, and so it just became part of the resume, and Chris Tanev has gone through that as well, and Brock Besser's not to those levels yet, but that has been one of the questions or criticisms, depending on how you want to label it, about Besser here early. And there was some debate as to what Brock Besser was worth when he was trying to get that deal done. It ends up being a bridge deal, which is, from a Canucks point of view, okay, we're not willing to go long-term at the money you want to commit, even though we like you as a player. And from Besser's view, it's, hey, I'm going to show you guys that you would have been getting a steal on me. So it would have been an interesting conversation no matter which way it went with Besser in the playoffs this year.
I guess there's another way to look at this, too, of who has a lot to gain. Like someone like Antoine Roussel, as far as not contractually, not ice time, none of that, but as far as like being to the folklore of, you know, Canucks history, like fans here still wax on about Jarkko Ruutu and, you know, tripping up Dion Phaneuf. And if he had a moment in the playoffs, it's like, oh yeah, that's our guy now, right? He could have risen up and to be part of the tales of Canucks playoff history.
Well, and because of what he's gone through over the past calendar year with his injury and how long he struggled this season, Bick, when he got back into the lineup, this could have been a redemptive playoff for Antoine Roussel. That could, it could have been, this is every single reason that we went out and got this guy a couple of summers ago for what you're seeing right now.
See, this is why we need a playoffs for all these storylines that we just hashed out. This is why we need some semblance of games back, if it's medically safe to do so, for us to have conclusions to some of these potential loose ends.
A couple of comments coming in on Brock Besser. We'll get to one after the break. Before we get to it, someone says Brock will light it up next season for sure. I feel it. That comes from one optimistic Canucks fan. We'll get to the other question after the break, and Colby Armstrong as well. That's up next on Canucks Central with Scott Rentoul and Bick Nizar on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
We're all looking for a little bit of normalcy in our lives right now, and a lot of that comes through sports. So, Bick, it is comforting in some ways to know that people are pitching trade scenarios here, even while we are in this hiatus.
Canucks Nation never stops, man. Never stops.
Langley, fun guy. We were talking about Besser and what we wanted to see in the playoffs, just gaining some evidence one way or another, talking about what it means for his career. Langley, fun guy, texts in, Besser wants to be at home. We could get Dumba. Do you make that move? If that move is available, Matt Dumba for Brock Besser. Bick, do you make that move?
In the real world of how that trade would look like, I'm assuming it's Besser plus, so no. If it's one for one, much different conversation, and I'm a bit more open to that idea. But look, I'm not sure if I'm including things on a Besser side of a trade. Like, I want a legit number, like top two D-man, and I understand Matt Dumba scores and he's very offensive D-man, but I want like an overall stable D-man.
I could see that deal being one for one. The financials almost match. Besser is younger. I could see it possibly being one for one. Let's say it is, just for the hypothetical here. Well, that now, Langley, fun guy, not to move away from your question, that now becomes a philosophical question overall. Because if you are moving that particular forward to beef up your back end, and now you're committing that much money on your back end, the money is going to have to come from somewhere. We know where the challenges are financially on this Canucks roster, Bick. So unless there's a compliance buyout involved where you can just get the Louis Erickson money off the books, and that's the $6 million you now have to sign Jacob Markstrom, or if you decide to go a different direction philosophically, goaltending, sign Tyler Toffoli because, hey, we're going to have another scorer in our top six. We can't just be devoid of wingers. We're talking about bigger philosophical changes now if you are considering that move.
Yeah, this is very much kind of just moving some deck chairs, right? It's definitely an interesting conversation. Again, one for one, you have to explore it. And what would this look like overall? I'm just not sure if like this is the time you would want to try to cash in on an asset like Brock Besser, as good as Matt Dumba is. But it's just like, what role do you envision him playing here? And how do you want to utilize getting a top four D man at that cost to supplement your roster?
A little bit of news coming in. Colby Armstrong set to join us here in just a couple minutes' time, hopefully sooner rather than later. This just in, the NHL, like many of the leagues right now are doing, Bick, they have extended the self-quarantine period for players and staff. This is the third time that they've moved the date. It was originally March 27th, then they said, hey, April 4th, which actually coincides with what would have been the last day of the regular season. April 15th now, according to Sportsnet's Chris Johnson, is the day for quarantine. I don't think that can come as any surprise. If that date gets moved back one more time or a couple more times, I won't be surprised by that. We use the term unprecedented times. They really are. And based on where we're at right now, I don't think anyone can see this as a shock.
We're just going to keep rolling this day back. I know the NBA or the CDC has said to the NBA, like, no chance in April, right? So I expect slowly this will get moved back to May.
Yep, I'm same place as you. It's Scott Rento, Bick Nazar again, looking to hook up with Colby Armstrong of Sportsnet. Last time we had him on, Bick, and again, I'm going to ask you before we get to Colby, he told us that he was going to be working out a lot at home. Bick, where are you at in your personal fitness right now? I'd like to keep up with this.
It's coming along. Just I'm making sure more so than anything that I have the stamina to go along with this, because it's been pretty intense. I do feel myself fading a bit, but it's about building a nice base that I can prolong this for weeks on end.
Well said. Rome was not built in a day, my friend. Neither was Armstrong, as in Colby, who joins us now. Where are you at with your personal fitness, and are you safe? Are you healthy, my friend?
I'm safe. I'm healthy. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. Good to hear you guys. And yeah, we're all safe and healthy here in Pittsburgh, and you know, we're quarantining, and I got four kids keeping me fairly busy. Health and fitness is here and there, I would say. It's been raining a ton here. It would help if things were just a little bit better outside, maybe go out and get some rays. You know, you got to get some rays to, you know, help you mentally and physically. It feels good to get a little sun. And you know, I'm hit and miss right now, boys, with the fitness right now. But I'm chasing my kids around a lot. We're staying busy. They started online classes yesterday. So that's been a challenge in itself as well.
Yeah, the cardio program involving chasing the kids. Hey, Colby, not to make this a political interview by any means, but I do wonder, as a Canadian, though you've lived in Pittsburgh for quite some time and that has become your home, the two different countries, there's a different feel to them. There's a different medical system, all of that. Was there any part of you that wondered through any part of this process? I wonder if we should be on the other side of the border during this.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, it's different, but you know, we've been down here for 5 years now, and I've been in the States most of my whole career. My wife's from Pennsylvania. So I'm fairly comfortable with how it is down here. And I didn't think about that at all. Like when I got done my last trip into Toronto, I was more like, oh my God, I'm flying into this Pearson airport and I'm on the international side and clearing customs. And who knows where, you know, everyone's coming in from all over the country there, you know, like the States, you know, Europe. I was like, my first day back, I was like, I'm quarantining. I'm scared. I was kind of scared to like being in Pearson airport. And anyone that travels, I'm sure feels the same way for work. So, I talked to my aunt and uncle. They live in Loon Lake, Saskatchewan. I FaceTime with them the other day to check in on them, and they're out in the middle of nowhere living at the lake. So talk about being like the furthest away from anything that you could possibly be. And I was saying to them, I'd be like, it'd be at the end of this, we might be all moving up to Loon Lake and crashing at their place, with needing to stay away from everyone and pretty much living up in the bush up in Saskatchewan. So that might be the safest place to be right now.
You said the kids are doing online classes. Did they get tired of the Colby homeschooling?
No, this is only day two of it so far. Like I know like the last few weeks we've tried to, you know, read some books and do regular stuff, but kind of hoping that like this may end. And then as the numbers keep ramping up, you see what's going on. We're like, okay, we got to happen. Then the emails start coming from school. They're setting up Google Classrooms, which I think everyone's on. It seems talking to all my friends with their kids. And so just having to load that up and, you know, kind of, you know, as a parent, you know, figure that part out. I'm not even good at writing emails or checking my email or, you know, I don't even fully know how to use, you know, the internet properly still. Like I'm way behind in that department. So my wife has handled most of it, and we kind of just set them up in a side room and hopefully they can get some focus and get it done. And it's unprecedented times. It's crazy. It's weird, but I got to say, on top of it all, it actually has been pretty fun. It's been great being home with my kids all day long. It's been great doing like the homeschooling stuff now with them. It's been fun. Like we found a fun way to get everything kind of done. So, you know, through all this, you know, just being home with everybody and, you know, also working on different things, right? Like we've decluttered our lives a ton, going room to room and just being like, we don't need this. We don't, why do we have this? We don't need that. It's kind of been, you know, through all this and as scary as it's been, you know, personally refreshing just to be home every single day. And we're not going anywhere and kind of take care of, you know, our area and be with your family.
you sitting in on the classes at all? I'll tell you what, I was trying to help my niece with the some homework recently. I had no idea what was happening, and I was like, oh, you're on your own. I can't help you at all. I might need to jump back into grade school as well to just learn a couple
of things. It's so hard. It's so hard. Like, I through the year, I've helped, like, my son's, like, smarter than me in math already. He's 9 years old. He's really good. And, like, all these things that are coming home, like, I don't even remember doing this stuff. I can't believe I knew how to do it. But, like, my brain also works differently than what he's been taught or how his brain works. Because I'm like, he'll show me a problem. This is my issue. And I'll do the problem, like, how my brain does it. And he's like, Dad, that's wrong. You have to do it this way. And I'm like, what the heck? And my brain doesn't work that way. So, we're having a good time. He's teaching me a lot. My kids are teaching me a lot right now. It's been good.
I just want to go back to I want to go back to your description for a second of your internet usage that you don't fully know how to use the internet. What are you, unfrozen caveman lawyer? Who are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much I am. I honestly, being an athlete, I know some guys are way more savvy on with tech stuff than others. And I was a guy on the opposite end. Like, I literally just know how to text. I've started using email since working with Sportsnet. Everyone loves sending emails at work. I've noticed that. That's like, can't you just text me? But everything's on email. I don't know why. But other than that, like going on the NHL.com website, going to hockeyfights.com randomly, going here, going there. Like, that's my limit on the internet. Like, just a couple sites. Daily Faceoff. I do Daily Faceoff. I do NHL.com. I use Twitter. I don't have any other social media. Look, Twitter is enough for me. I know. I think I have to get an Instagram here with this dragging on, because I got Carolyn Cameron bugging me. She wants me to go on Instagram live with her, and we're gonna hopefully do something together with some kind
TikTok,
of like
that's
online.
The kids are getting.
Yeah, TikTok's incredible, right? TikTok's been incredible. Some of the videos these people are posting. Brendan Gallagher one was unbelievable.
That was good.
Brendan Dunlop of Sportsnet is absolutely losing his mind, That's fairly obvious, but I'm not super great on anything to do with the internet and social media at all. I'm really not.
We do have to talk a little bit of hockey. Scott and I were talking, just about the business of the game as well, just how much revenue could be lost if there is no playoffs or any sort of tournament. At what point in your career did you kind of consider the business of the league? Because a lot of this, if the players like don't play, it's like, okay, escrow starts to creep up to like 30% potentially. At what point in your career did you realize that, you know, you do have to kind of worry about your PA brothers?
Well, yeah, and I think it was, you know, for me especially, it was the last lockout and going through that and the meetings and understanding and, you know, going to New York for the players' meetings and, you know, sitting in on all the conference calls and really having an understanding. Before that, coming out of the last lockout, I was in the minors. But, you know, having meetings with other guys, and really, I have to say, a lot of the veteran guys are really good at helping the young guys out. And, you know, like I had, you know, I played with guys like, you know, at times I played with Matthew Schneider, helps run the Players Association. I played with Chris Chelios in Atlanta. Both those guys were in Atlanta with me for a year. I was able to play with like Mark Recchi and some of these guys that I know that the veteran player now, like of those guys, is ilk and that age, it not around as much as they were. But I played with Ron Hainsey in Atlanta as well, who's really on top of that stuff. And those guys are really good at, you know, helping young guys out or helping guys get interested in and really grasp it. Because day to day, when you're playing, you're kind of just focused on like staying there and you're just focused on, you know, really yourself and how you're playing, and it kind of consumes you. So, to have certain guys around that, you know, you can talk to or they talk to you and they can help you understand what's going on around the league. And usually it's your team rep. Those guys are really important, and those guys, you know, helped us. I'd say it wasn't until like when I got to Atlanta, probably, playing with some of the, you know, veteran guys that we had Bobby Holik, and then we had Ron Hainsey, who was real dialed in on that stuff. And others, Jim Slater, another guy that was real dialed in, that could really, you know, grab our group and bring us through the process of what's going on with the league and the business side of things. And, those guys are really important. So, you know, and now that I'm on the outside watching this and watching this, you know, coronavirus pandemic and shut down, you know, the world and, you know, sporting leagues and the NHL and what it could mean, like you said, for next year, 30% escrow, and, you know, guys will be playing for like after taxes and the escrow, you know, what's left on the table. So there's a huge implication financially, not only on the league, but players as well. And I think guys are aware of that. It's guys want to play. Guys want to get playing right now as soon as possible and get this season in and get that revenue generated again right now, because it's affecting everybody.
Well, and we're all trying to wonder what a world looks like with no playoffs. And because of that, people start going, oh, man, I'm going to miss out on this in the playoffs. You know, that changes Colby market to market, certainly in Vancouver. Oh, man, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, the opportunity to see them in the playoffs. I can't believe we're not going to get that. Is there any team or any player in particular that if the NHL does not find a way to have a postseason this year, you're going to really feel like you missed out on?
Well, I just think some of those teams that are like so primed, you know, to have a big run, like, you know, another team like Boston again, some teams that made some moves, like Vegas, and, you know, has kind of, you know, built up their arsenal of players and was hoping to have another big run again. And, you know, that's a whole thing too. Like, think about that too, like all the draft picks and the conditions on picks and, you know, what's going to happen with all that side of it as well, just after this trade deadline. You know, and guys getting rentals, let's just say that's completely gone. It's gone. It's wild, the ramifications of that on a team and how the league's going to sort all those things out as well. So, I just feel for those teams and those organizations that went for it or, you know, made a move to really get deeper, you know, to help their team, and this is it. Tampa Bay, another one. They went and added all those depth guys to help out and add a little sandpaper to their lineup after a disappointing, you know, playoffs last year. And, you know, if they don't get a chance to redeem themselves this year, like what happens to their team next year, right?
Well, and I'm not putting these two guys out to pasture, but I was looking back at the Crosby-Ovechkin rivalry earlier today, and we've been treated to this thing for the past 15 years, and they've gone to the playoffs against one another head-to-head four different times, and it might mean another installment of that we don't get. And who knows how many of those there are left as these guys head into the latter stages of their careers. You were around that personal rivalry as it developed early in the careers of both Crosby and Ovechkin. What was it like to be around that?
Yeah, it was awesome to be in the atmosphere of, like, you know, I think they like to say it's media hype, but it is just generally hype. Like, it's when you got two guys like that going against each other, and Washington, Pittsburgh, in general, is a fairly big rivalry without those two. You know, when you add those two types of players into the equation, it puts it through the roof. And then, you know, just the buzz of being, you know, on the team and being around that situation and that game when those two are facing each other, that buzz, like, it's like another level of adrenaline almost going into the game where you're trying to do it for your guy, because there's such like a heated rise to the game of those two versus each other. You know, they'll deflect and say, oh no, it's our team versus their team and stuff like that. But it's like such a rise of the heat, of that rivalry, that you want to win it for your teammate. You want to do it for your guy. And, you know, it just elevates the entire situation to where it's like a playoff game when you play them. It's like a, you know, game 56 of the regular season, but here's this rivalry that's been pumped so big, those two versus each other. And, you know, there's like pressure there, and they each want to do really, really well against each other, and they also want to win. But just, it just elevates it to another level to be a part of those kinds of games. And I think back to, you know, when was it, 09, when the Pens won their first cup, there was Sid, and they met in the playoffs in that dueling hat tricks game where they each, like, it's just incredible the things that they've done against each other. And then you look at career wise, their stats is, just two super power players. And, you know, the ability to have that rivalry against each other, you know, through their career, to miss out on that and possibly, you know, maybe it would have been a potential first round matchup with Philly and Pittsburgh and Washington all kind of kicking around in the division there. It would have been interesting to see them go head to head again.
Colby, really quickly, you know, just kind of saying that, you know, trying to do it for your guy. I think when we think of leadership and fans, especially when they think of leaders, they think of the guy like in the room being vocal. Maybe you can take us in there. Was Sid ever like that? Or did you just kind of have an understanding like, hey, we know how big this is, you don't need to say anything?
Yeah, no, I would say in my time with him early in his career, he wasn't a super vocal guy. Like, he was really focused, dialed in guy. And, You know, he laid it all out in line with his play. Like he, just the way he performed is like to another level that, you know, was more than, it was more than words with what he did and the way he carried himself with our group. So I think as he's gotten older, I think his understanding of that has gotten even better, to everything he does and how it affects the team, to, you know, having a good shift or, you know, sending a message at the right time or turning it up and carrying a line, to, you know, being that guy, just showing that with his play. And, you know, you see the success that he's been able to have, through his career. But, yeah, he wasn't really a super vocal guy, but he's like a fiery, competitive, hard-nosed, like, battler for as good as he is. Like, that's the kind of mentality that he has, and that's how he pushed teams. That's how he pushed guys, and that's how he pushed himself. Like, Sid, a little bit angry is always a little bit better, you know? Same with most guys, but when you get him a little angry and you kind of back him into the corner a little bit, he really finds a way to dig himself out and usually brings about five or six guys with him out of the corner. And, you know, he's just that kind of elite player, but that's the way he leads. It's kind of with that hard-nosed mentality.
Well, we broke down the dueling hat tricks game earlier on my program today. The next time we're doing something I think may interest you, I will let you know so you can tune in, buddy.
All right, Scott. Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Good hearing you. Good hearing you guys safe at home as well. And, you know, we'll get through this, boys. We're going to get through this, and it'll be that much more sweeter when life is back to normal, won't it?
It will. Hey, thanks for doing this and giving me a reason to bring up Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer, one of the underrated Saturday Night Live skits of all time.
Unbelievable pull getting that one out there. That's really good.
Thanks, buddy.
Really good. All right, guys. Yeah, take care.
See you, man.
Talk to you again.
That is Colby Armstrong talking to us about his internet usage, chasing his kids around the house, and getting a little bit of hockey talk in there as well. I know you guys will have some hockey talk with Elliot Friedman today coming up on the program, correct?
Yeah, 4 o'clock. Looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Hey, Bick, have a great show today. Keep yourself safe and healthy. We'll do this again tomorrow. Colby Armstrong mentioned Carolyn Cameron there. She will be a part of Reach Deep, which comes your way next. Scott Rintoul show back on the air tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Thanks for all of your contributions today. I will talk to you then. Keep yourselves safe. Keep yourselves healthy. You need to reach out at Bick650, at Scott Rintoul on Twitter. Both of us open for business in that regard. Hit us up. Enjoy the programming next on your home of Vancouver Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.